This is the conference center. I would like to let all parties know the call is now being recorded. If anyone does object, you may disconnect. Thank you.
Thank you, operator. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the next installment of our HSCLD advisory group. It's Andy, and as usual, we have an HSCLD agenda that we put out about a day before the call. Today, we're going to go quickly, as we usually do, through roll call and some administrative material. I put in the agenda principle number 4. That's sort of where we left off in last week's dialogue, so I've left some time for that. And we also have some control material that was distributed this week as well. So time permitting, we'll get to that and start a dialogue around that as well. Before I get into roll call, does anybody want to change or modify the agenda? Okay, great. So I'll call out everyone who I see. If I miss you, please let me know. Evan?
Yeah.
Evan Fitch, I've got you.
Yep.
Jonathan Frakes, I've got you on. Dave Piscatello. Mike Pelage. Derek Andre. John Levine.
Yeah.
Don McElwain. And Steve Holston. Did I miss anybody? Okay, great. So the thing is, note everybody that we do not have a regularly scheduled call for next Wednesday. Normally it would be our morning call for the people in the States, but we're not holding a call next week because of the Nairobi meeting. There is a workshop in Nairobi. It's at a pretty early time for those of us on the West Coast. The workshop, I'm putting the workshop material together now for distribution out to the HSTLD group by Friday, so we can all review it over the weekend and make sure there's no showstoppers there. The idea, though, is the material is really largely going to be informational and background in nature, and the thought there is that we don't have a huge amount of participation from the HSTLD advisory group going to be actually in Nairobi. So rather than trying to make forward progress with the group, it's more of a time, I think, to reach out to the community and really give them a background on what we're doing. Greg Rattray will be out there representing the advisory group. I will not be going to Nairobi, although I will be dialing in for the meeting. The next and last piece of administrative material that I have, a couple of questions on the Adobe Connect, and I can see why it's extremely confusing. I sort of have a little dark gray area of the agenda that I put out every week, and in that area it says the Adobe Connect link, sort of giving the assumption that there's always a link. Well, I haven't actually created an Adobe Connect link yet because we haven't had a lot of material to sort of link to and to discuss. Going forward, not next week because we don't have a meeting, but the week after, I will start setting up Adobe Connect links for us as we're going through control material and the like. So that will be an active link. Thanks, everybody, for giving me that initial feedback before the call started. And with that, I'm going to turn over, Mike, to you to sort of go through the agenda, unless you want me to continue forward.
You can continue. As I said, I'll just manage the queue as begin to discuss the different elements.
Okay, great. So the first thing on the agenda then is principle number 4. We had a great discussion about this toward the end of last week's call, and I think in general everyone was pretty positive about principle number 4. As a refresher, principle number 4 is about registrants. So the principles 1 through 3 really deal with registry and registrar types of issues. Principle number 4 calls out registrants in a high security zone are expected to maintain current and accurate information and to commit to refrain from activities designed to confuse or mislead the Internet-using public. Under that principle, there are really 2 topics and objectives, and then there's a little bit of possible criteria topic information put in as well. what I'm going to do now is just sort of open up to the floor again. Mike, maybe we can manage through this. But I know there was some good dialogue from last week, and we just didn't have time to finish all the dialogue to get everyone's thoughts on the table. So with that, does anybody want to talk about Principle 4 and have the floor at this point?
This is Evan. I just want to apologize for not having been around last week, because that was something that was near and dear to me. So I'm really happy to hear that it was positively received.
Yeah, Evan, I think you got some really, really good feedback on that. I think that's my Andy's perspective. It may not be the group perspective, but I think everyone looked at it and thought it was a pretty good idea.
This is Steve. I'll jump in the queue, Andy or Mike, whenever.
Go ahead, Steve. You're up.
Okay. I guess with Principle 4 and with some of the other principles, I'm wondering about how we have the accuracy of data, and I guess more broadly the availability of data, as opposed to, strictly speaking, security. What are the group's thoughts as to how accuracy fits in for being highly secure?
So let me see if I got that straight, Steve. Are you saying how do we go about sort of objectively verifying this data? Because one of the concerns I think that was discussed last week, Evan, was while there was no objection to, I think, the idea of this being a good thing, the question was how does one potentially go about measuring it or verifying it? Because, again, these are criteria on the end user that are somewhat outside the control of the registry. To a large extent. So, Steve,
Mike, that is what I'm getting at, is the level of control that a registry would have over that sort of thing, over the accuracy of data that flows through its system. I understand needing to batten down the hatches and make sure that there is control as to access and more what we think of more traditionally as security issues. It would be a very good thing to have all data within systems accurate. That would help, but I'm not sure I understand necessarily the linkage and the control element as to how you can even do that.
Michael, this is John. Can I get in the queue?
McElwain. John McElwain. Yes. Okay, John, you're up. So what I want to do there is, now that we have the question framed, Evan, since you were not on last week and Principle 4 was your baby,
yep.
Would you like to respond to Steve's inquiry?
Sure, but I'll yield to John first if you want to go.
Yeah, I say as somebody who deals in this, what I think we're talking about here is not that the registries would be certifying that the information was accurate. So I wouldn't expect that we would be putting any burden on the registries or the registrars, but that if a registrant had put out false information concerning, for instance, their identity, address, et cetera, and that was discovered, that there could be penalties then taken against that registrant. And the way it comes up in my practice is I've got a domain name that is being used either for fraudulent or trademark infringing reasons, and you just want to track down who is doing all of this. And if there's false information in the who is data, then that really is a hurdle to get over to try to get to the right person. So if there was a way that you could say, in this zone, registrant's information needs to be truthful, it needs to be accurate, and if we discover that it's not, then, and I'm not saying this would be the ultimate remedy, but then a possible penalty could be in place that would discourage that type of behavior.
This is Jonathan.
Okay.
Okay, so, all right, hold on. Jonathan, I heard you speak up. Evan?
I'm ready to come in any time, but if other people want to speak first, that's fine with me.
Okay, well, Evan, I'll let, if you want to go, since this, is, again, is your topic, I'll let you go, and then
okay.
Go back to Steve, and then Jonathan.
Okay, first I'll address the issue of to what extent is accuracy of information considered to be a security issue. And I would say that comes mainly from the point of view of the Internet using public in saying that accuracy of information, knowing who it is that is behind that domain that is feeding you something, is absolutely a security issue, especially in context of phishing and similar bad actor activities. I think the intention here is as John said, I mean, if I had my way, I'd like to have something built in saying that there is zero tolerance for inaccurate data. And if a second-level domain within a high-security zone is discovered to be willfully providing inaccurate information and refuses to make it accurate, they have no right to be there. I'm just saying that's one possible consequence, one possible thing of this, but the issue being is, given that one of the main goals behind the high security zone is the building of public confidence, I would bring forth the viewpoint that public confidence has as much to do with the registrants, because they are basically the public facing part of this whole chain. You know, the public isn't going to the registry's website or the registrar's website. They're going to the registrant's. And if the registrant is the one seeking to hide behind inaccurate data while doing bad things, that, to me, affects the public perception of the whole zone. So I don't know if I'm expressing myself well that way, but basically in talking about why this is a security issue, I think it's very much a public perception of security. And the main point behind Principle 4, not necessarily meaning something that a registry has to enforce on itself, but essentially is a message to registrants that, you know, if you don't do this, there are consequences.
Okay.
Mike, may I get into the queue? It's Andy.
Andy.
David would like to as well.
Yep. So what we have now is managing the queue. Steve, you get you if you like, you could have a quick reclarification or a rebuttal to that discussion from Evan and John. Jonathan, you're up in the batter's box. You're up next, and Andy, you're third in the queue. So Steve, you have the floor. What was that?
I said, could you add Dave too?
Dave Piscatello?
Yeah.
Yep, you're number four. Go, Steve.
Thank you for characterizing that and explaining that. That does make very good sense to me. What I would like to be sure is that we figure out a way to control that which is within our control and not impose obligations that we can't control. And when I say we, I largely mean registries. So if registries are required to police that in some manner, that will be very difficult. It'll be tough for us to know whether the information is accurate or inaccurate. If at the time some bad actor does something, it turns out that their information is not correct, should we be able to strip them of their registration? Absolutely. I think that prudent policies for registration would already hold that. So I want to get at, is this incremental, and is this an additional burden beyond that which a normal registry would have in the first place?
All right. Steve, thanks for that clarification. Jonathan, you're up.
Thank you very much. I agree, John, with the premise that it should be important for the registrants to be validated in some manner by the potential user as a measure of security. However, I think it's going to be a challenge to do validation on behalf of the registry. And I think there's an important distinction, as Steve points out, between what the registry can probably reasonably accomplish. I think that in the, just framing it around that we're probably talking registries here and maybe suggestions of best practices, that advancing to the end state of what this might look like to something we could reasonably accomplish might be to suggest wording for the potential registry agreement that might frame the necessity for accurate information to be provided, you know, the consequences of which are rapid suspension of the domain or something that allows the registry some recourse. So if you didn't put accurate information, then your domain is in jeopardy. And the other comment here is I often hear in what John said, it wasn't clear to me if the real topic was the accuracy of the data itself and the registrant information or the veil of a proxy service being problematic. John, can you clarify that?
I don't think that it's the veil of a proxy service being problematic. I think that if the underlying data that was provided to that private registration service was faulty, so that you couldn't get in touch with anybody if there was a problem, would be the issue. Does that clarify?
It does somewhat. So the thought being here, speaking from the angle of the registry and the perspective of the registry, you've got a registrar in between, assuming vertical separation, who's got to do all this validation, et cetera. I've seen VeriSign for their secure certificates do third-party validation of registrants, you know, owners of domain names. Would it be that we might include suggestions of that some sort of validation like that might be a portion of the registration in a higher security zone?
This is Evan. I can see multiple different ways to accomplish the goal. I don't think I'd necessarily restrain a registry to do things in a certain way. I think I'm more interested in the result than the mechanics of getting there, personally.
Well, of course, but we want to make sure that it's something that can be reasonably accomplished and factor in, you know, how the system works now today so that we can chip away at the edges of these problematic areas, right? So, you know, if you take a look, for example, at .travel, they have, as part of the registration process, you must receive ahead of time and provide some form of a token that your registrar will include in the registration in order for that registration to go through, called a UIN. And so that's some form of an advanced validation that happens. It's still loose, but at least someone provides their qualifications and information to the registry in some form so that they can still register the domains through a registrar system. And then you've got something like Calm with Thin Who Is, but there are certificates that allow for people to have the beautiful little lock on their website for e-commerce. So as far as the trust in the high security zone, there's a couple different manners to get there. I'm just wondering, you know, the concept of a registration happens where a registrant goes to a registrar, and then the registrar just submits some whatever information the registrant had submitted back to the registry. Neither the registrar or the registry typically validate that information.
And this is John McElwain. I don't envision that anything relating to this registrant information would need to be validated. It would just be if there was a discovery, if the registry was put on notice that there was false information, that there could be some penalty. Now, I don't mind investigating ways that we could have the registries or the registrars do some sort of validation, but that wasn't my thinking of how this would work.
Okay.
Yeah. This is Steve. May I jump in the queue again, please?
Hey, hold on. What I want to do here is we got a little sidetracked, so just exercising time management here. Steve, I will give you the word, but I do want to let out Andy and Dave, who have been quietly sitting in the batter's box, to get their time at the plate. So, Andy, you're up.
Thanks, Mike. So I'll try to be as quick as possible. So the dialogue I'm hearing is really good, and this week I've tried to put out some control samples. So my bit of the conversation really is about that. What might I suggest to put in place for controls that would meet this objective? And I think it may be two areas. So what I'd like to see from a control perspective would be sort of a policy with some enforcement in there. So what's the policy on registrant behavior, and what would happen if they violated that policy? And then maybe a process for what the interested parties, registry and registrar, do in the event that they find that they've got a problem. And that process links back to the policy. Those would be the two controls, I think, at a minimum, that I would want to see in place that I think that the registry could influence that would help improve that accuracy. There are some other controls I heard thrown around there, so actual validation checking, that's a layer deeper. But I'm just throwing out, you know, those two things might be the minimum sort of types of controls that I'd want to see in place, the policy and the process controls, to have comfort that there was something in the structure of this HSTLD that could police that accuracy. That's what I'm just throwing out as an idea.
All right, Dave, you're up.
Dave?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you call me. I think that one of the things that we need to consider is that there are a number of validation mechanisms that are not present in the current registration system broadly that would be very practical for a registry that wants to go and get a certification as a high security TLD registry to impose on registrants. So in the same manner that many of the CCTLDs actually require a natural person to provide a passport or a business to demonstrate some articles of incorporation or an EIN or the equivalent, whatever it happens to be in a European country as an example, I don't see any reason why those sorts of minimum criteria wouldn't be mandatory to assure that you have accurate data for the applicant for a domain registration. The mechanisms for how that actually gets incorporated into various registrar front ends obviously have to be considered, but I think that at the minimum you might have an HSTLD that would want to be a community of interest network, that would want to be assured that the parties that were applying for registrations were of a particular, had a particular pedigree, whatever that pedigree might be, attorneys, computer scientists, rocket surgeons, whatever. And then you might also have other criteria for a set of regulated entities like a bank. Maybe you have to be a member of an FDIC, or you have to be a member of a realtors association. You have to be able to prove those things. So I think that we shouldn't narrow ourselves to thinking that the current kinds of registration processes are the only ones that an HSTLD might want to require.
Okay, so perhaps what we could do here, is there anyone else that has not spoken on this issue that would like to sort of have a last final word before we move on to discussing the control elements? John, what is it, John Levine?
Yeah, I'm here. Can I hop in and say three sentences?
Of course. Everybody gets their turn.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, if I may be blunt, if we can't come up with a system that will allow an HSTLD to credibly say that if it's in .bank, you know it's a real bank, we're wasting our time. And I have to say I'm a little dismayed that I'm already sort of hearing a race to the bottom. From say, well, what's sort of the minimum we can do? It's like, well, you know, we won't re-verify them, but if we get a complaint, we might do something about it. And that's exactly where we are now. Look at .pro, which was supposed to require that you, that applicants be licensed professionals. They didn't enforce it, and .pro is now fundamentally worthless. I mean, I would just as soon not make the same mistake over again and have this, and instead concentrate on making this something that will actually provide value to users, even if the registrations are sort of expensive, because I think that's what we need to do to come up with anything useful.
Well, can I ask a quick question? Did you consider what I described as part of the race to the bottom?
No. When you actually... basically, the problem with the race to the bottom is everybody starts at the top, you know, and the issue is to stay there. You know, it's like, okay, you have to verify people. Well, you know, do you re-verify them every 6 months or every year? You know, the sort of stuff you're describing is fine. And if it's, you know, and I think it's reasonable to talk about ways that you could outsource the verification to third parties, although preferably better than the way .travel does it, which as a .travel registrant, I can assure you is a joke. But, yeah, I mean, the stuff Dave was talking about is perfectly reasonable.
Okay. So,
Mike, this is Steve. Can I jump in? Getting another word.
There you go. Hey, put it this way: as someone who actually runs infrastructure, let's hear from somebody. So, let's hear from someone with operational experience. Go ahead.
Okay. So I don't want to race to the bottom either. I really don't. I do want to remind everybody, however, that it is incredibly expensive to do that kind of vetting. And VeriSign, which does secured seals and that kind of vetting, it costs a lot of money to do. And if you're actually going to do it right, it costs even more. So if we are setting a baseline that requires that, we ought to think it through carefully. Let's keep in mind there are two different types of seals that we might be talking about here. One is the security of the registry. And one is the security, so to speak, of the registrant. They're very different things, and I think if you're going to have a seal that's displayed by a registrant because they need to jump over hurdles themselves, that is a very big undertaking. And that is different than perhaps, as I think Jonathan was noting, if registries don't have direct access to registrants, all we'd really be talking about there for a secure seal, so to speak, would be probably a display on the registrar's website so that when a registrant is signing up for a domain name, they know that this TLD is a secure zone. But let's not think that by having that level of hurdle of vetting registrants, that is not going to severely limit the uptake of a TLD.
All right.
This is Evan. Can I just say a very quick reply on that?
Okay. What happens is we're now down to 15-second rebuttals. Evan, go.
Okay. My point is simply that you can't break it out that way. This thing was designed to be a verification of high security zones, not high security TLDs. If this isn't going to work throughout the food chain, then it's not going to work at all.
All right. Excellent. So here's one of the things, and again, going back to my lovely favorite document, the Affirmation of Commitments, it talks about fact-based decision-making. And I think one of the things that we have to do here is, I think, try to perhaps gather some information on cost, right? So what I'm going to do is I'll try to reach out to our friends at Mark Monitor, CSC, and some of the other corporate branded TL registrars that do work to kind of get an idea of what the cost elements are for those countries. Because, Dave, I think you use the word many CCs require, I think, business documents or other personal information. I want to perhaps, instead of dealing in generalities, I'd like to try to do this on sort of a more factual basis. So perhaps they could give us some data and we could look at what the price point is. And at least just have that data point here for the group's consideration. So that's kind of Mike Pelage's takeaway as chair. I will undertake that to try to do some fact-finding information for how those CCs that require a higher verification, what the potential cost impact is. So what I now want to do is, looking that we now have approximately 30 minutes left of time and how we want to get to some of the control elements, I would now like to move to the discussion of control. So if there is anyone else that would like to continue this discussion, I would please encourage them to do so either on the wiki or via the mailing list. So, Andy, let's start plowing through some of these control elements. There's a lot of them there. I don't know. Do you have any idea on how you would like to go through them?
Sure, Mike. Okay, so I hope everyone got a copy of the spreadsheet, and I apologize I didn't put this material up to the wiki quite yet. I wanted to get it out in spreadsheet form to the group. So there's two things I'd like to get a little bit of feedback on today. First is the general formatting of what I'm putting together, and then second, obviously, the content. And I know, Dave, you've weighed in on some good questions, and Christoph has some good content as well. But the thought here is that I'm trying to take a really rough draft stab at putting actual controls together for each principle. We've got principle number one sort of outlined in the spreadsheet, and I've got some columns for various control structures put in place. We have ISO, so it's the ISO 27000 series, WebTrust, the APWG has given some comments, and FFIEC. For this first pass, I really concentrated on the ISO 27000 series, and I tried to draw out controls that would support the objectives and then upward to the principle level. So the spreadsheet really is meant to stimulate that sort of where the rubber meets the road of how we might actually describe good controls for these individual things. And I've got a column for comments as well, so that the reader and you guys as a group can sort of see what I was thinking when putting these things together. If everyone's happy with the general format of this, I'll post it up to the wiki so we can start sort of group development of it. So that's the first piece. You know, is this a decent format? And the second piece is, there's a conversation about the actual content that we can have here and or via the wiki and email. The nice format, I think, too, is that if we decide to go with a report card view, we can turn this sort of thing into a report card relatively quickly as well. So with that, I think we should probably open it up to the floor, Mike, and get some sort of feedback on the format of it and then the content of it as well.
Well, let's first talk with format. As far as content, since there are a lot of different elements here, I think I'd sort of like to go one by one and just, discuss it. So what I first like to do is any comments on the general layout of what is in this spreadsheet and what other variables or fields we may want to add. So, anyone?
This is Evan. There's the three empty columns in the middle. The FFIEC, APWG, and WebTrust. I guess I'm just asking if they're all needed. I'm, if anything, hoping to make more real estate on the page for the actual narrative.
Well, I think what we're looking to do there, Evan, and Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, is we're looking to cross-reference these control elements in other criteria sets. So these, I think that's why we have those columns. And in fact, one of the other things that I would be looking to do is add a column for, are there any TLDs that currently use this criteria, whether it be a CC or a G. So I would actually be proposing to add some elements for that cross-referencing. Okay. Andy, I accurately described that.
Mike, definitely. I mean, that. Evan, I actually like it because I hope that's some real estate. But the reason I put that in there is that early on in our conversation, and I'm not sure exactly which weekly meeting it was, but there was a thought of the Rosetta Stone concept where we could take existing standards and sort of note where they might cover some of these areas. So we'd have an idea of, you know, if somebody is doing one of these types of things, would they have coverage sort of out of the gate? And that's the thought of that. It's a fairly simple thought. I don't know if it's a good one or a bad one, but that's the nature of it. And this rev, I only had time to go through the ISO layer. We'll fill the other ones out as we go.
Actually, I'm not disagreeing with needing them there. It's just, again, wanting to have on-screen real estate. We've got four columns, each of which are going to be only one line each, no matter, you know, for each of these items, whereas everything else is going to be very wordy. Can we not have a column that says cross-reference and then say, you know, ISO this, FFIEC this, APWG this, and put it all in one column, and that frees you up a little bit of real estate on the screen?
Good suggestion. I'll do it.
All right. Anyone else on the overall layout or format? Okay. So, Andy, let's start with the first one, 7.1.1, or I guess we should, is there any, let me see, do we number these? I guess. Are the control elements labeled, or you?
Mike, can I ask a question? Do you intend to go through, every one of these one by one on a teleconference?
I think a better
way to approach that may just be to sort of, you know, do that on the emails and so forth, and sort of take aggregate feedback on the call. It's up to you know, the group, but there's going to be a lot of these. That's all.
I don't want to sit there and go one by one, Dave. That's not exactly what I consider the best use of my time or other times, but we got 20 minutes left on the call. You know, if you want to sing Kumbaya, we could do that, or we could sit there and start looking at the control elements.
Well, this is Evan. If there's something else that you want to fill some time with, there's just a very quick point that I would make. And that is this table is critical to having critical to the program, but it's not a complete part of it. This is the technical component of it. There also needs to be an administrative and probably a marketing component to it, and those conversations have to go on in parallel. We need to have these controls gone over by, you know, people who are expert in the subject. But there also have to be people involved in parallel efforts to how is this going to be promoted to the rest of the ICANN community? How is this going to be promoted to people that are looking to be registries and perhaps even to existing ones? And how is this going to be sold to potential registrants and to the general public? I think there has to be separate conversations going on about these parts of it. That so far are not in this table. They don't belong in this table, but they still need to happen.
Mike, can I get the floor? It's Andy.
Go.
I mean, I totally agree with you. So actually, I've been trying to build up a little list of initiatives that I think we need to address as a part of a group, and the controls element is just one of them. The two other major ones I think that stick out, in addition to the marketing, are what measuring options do we have? I think we have two on the table already. We've got the report card sort of option and the certification seal sort of option. The two are not mutually exclusive, but they're two options. Maybe one comes before the other or what have you, but they're two options. So we need to sort of get that fleshed out a little bit and out there. And then there's a question of who actually does the assessing, right? So who actually is it the registries and a report card, but to get a green they have to go to some kind of accredited group to have them check over the controls, and how might that happen? I've got some real initial thoughts there, but that dialogue has to occur as well. And then to your point, there is some sort of, you know, marketing or public awareness of, hey, here's what's going on. I think the first three, the controls, the measuring, report card or certification, and the assessor quality and criteria, I'll call it, need to happen before marketing, because you want to market those three things, right? But that's sort of the the punch list that I started getting just really on the back of a napkin this week for discussion going forward. I don't know if those make sense. If they do, I can start pushing that out to the group as well in the wiki for further development, and then make it a part of our agenda. And I apologize.
Sorry, I got dropped from the call. I apologize. Right as Mike was answering my question. So.
Did that make sense, those four areas?
Yeah, makes total sense.
What I'll do then, and again, excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit. What I'll do then is I will push those thoughts out in a quick email after this call, and we can use those areas for dialogue in the agenda going forward. Now that we've got sort of a template for this controls piece, what we can do is push that up to the wiki and then just start using that to build criteria and controls around each of these things, if you guys sort of like that template. And maybe for that principle number four, it sounds like there's a lot of great ideas around that one. If somebody wants to start building that one, that would be great too. I'm sort of doing just real draft stuff based on the knowledge that I have with other types of certification programs, but certainly those that run registries will have a better idea of how actually to do it. I think that's all the piece of floor I need, Mike.
Okay. So what happens is we have 15 minutes left. Do you want to sit there and start going through the controls? I think we've had a discussion on how this Excel spreadsheet needs to be enhanced, and look forward to your future modifications along those lines.
What I'll do over the next week or so, every few days or once a week, I'll start sort of posting up some more additional draft material and modifications. So everyone kind of look out for that. I'll post it up to the wiki and I'll send an email out to everybody sort of with a quick overview of what's going up there, so people can have a quick look and weigh in. And Dave, I'm not ignoring your questions, Dave. I'm just working on the HSDLD workshop material, so I'll get to them as soon as I can.
Oh, that's okay. I just wanted to get some. I was sort of excited to see what you had, and I wanted to get some discussion going on the mail list.
Yeah, good stuff, by the way. Good question.
Obviously, we'd like to sit there and have most of these discussions take place on the mailing list, but since most of us, or actually all of us, are volunteers and not being paid, the fact that this was just distributed less than 24 hours before the call, it makes it a little difficult for people to perhaps have an in-depth discussion. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to take the couple of minutes we had remaining here and perhaps start deep diving to perhaps foster the dialogue that could take place via the mail list. That was my intention. So, Andy,
If I lose my voice again, I apologize, everybody. So what we did was we took the basic structure of the objectives, their topics, and the sort of illustrated criteria, and you'll note that there's not a direct one-to-one mapping between the illustrative criteria and the actual criteria that's in this draft. For instance, some of them we combined. So, like, there's a line item on number 45 that says application security and interface controls, where in the original illustrative controls they were two different things. They seem to work well together as a combination, particularly with the ISO control set. So then what we do is we go through the actual control, that's the illustrative control column, and then there's some comments about that qualify that control. So if I take the first one at the top on row 9, that's asset management. It references ISO control number 7.11. So for you ISO control people out there, you'll note that the ISO control set is broken down by numbers. I think Christophe, the other co-chair, posted that material on the wiki, so you should be able to tie back right in from the wiki. The control is that all assets that are in scope for registry operations should be clearly identified and an inventory of all in-scope assets drawn up and maintained. And then the comments sort of qualify what that
control really talks about. Then the idea is that for each of these objectives and criteria, we have one or more controls that would be important to make that criteria come to life, if you will, to be an actual control that would make that criteria work. We followed roughly under asset management, communications, operations management, access control, and information systems acquisition, development, and maintenance. And what I would encourage is everyone to really take a real high-level view at the illustrative controls and the comments and ask, are we looking at the right stuff? Have we described it correctly? Because I'm not a registry operator. Maybe I'm using the wrong language. Is the language good? Have I overstepped or understepped? Should there be a an additional control in here to qualify this? And does it really make sense? That's really sort of the question. Does it make sense? And we can go through each and every one of them. I'm not sure if anyone's had a chance at this point and has some specific questions that they want to go over. I know, Dave, you've answered some or asked some on the email list that Christoph started answering, and I'll come back to that as well. But at this time, has anyone else got any questions that they want me to sort of go into at all?
Right now you have a total of two high-level objectives listed, right? And everything else is just coming out from them, right?
Correct. And again, I'm kind of throwing this out there as I'm developing. I'm by no means comprehensive yet. I'm just trying to get the group involved in the development process.
Okay. So this is basically, here's where I'm going, and what do you think? Okay. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a sanity check before I spend tons of time on blowing this thing out with all of the principles. Does this look like the right way? Does it seem to be the right way to present it? I haven't yet tried to cut and paste it into the wiki. That might be a horrible nightmare, but I'll do my best to get it up there. And then the plan is, Evan, I think that was you. The plan is to really sort of give sort of buckets of updates to this. So that everyone can, over the course of a few days, sort of digest it and ask questions and continue to make progress, at least on this track. I'd like to get my sort of personal, sort of unofficial goal is to get all principles fleshed out in draft within a couple of weeks. I know there's going to be a lot of dialogue around it, and obviously I'm going to get some of the controls wrong, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of good feedback for getting them right again. But at least to get a structure for us out there that we can really take a look at and start evaluating, similar to the conversation we had around Principle 4 today.
Well, part of what I'm hoping is that in the workshop in Nairobi, it's not necessarily going to be one way, that we're going to be able to present, here's what we're working on, and maybe that's going to encourage some people from the outside that aren't necessarily here every week, but might have some really good input in the way we're doing this.
That's a really – can I get the floor again, Mike, for a second?
Go ahead.
That's a really great idea. So in the back of my mind, as I was putting together those four areas, the controls, the measure, the assess, and the market, one of the things that sort of came up in my mind was, we have this idea of a development snapshot, and we put one out a few weeks ago as a group to the community. Maybe in the next one, in 4 or 5 weeks or so, we want to put a development snapshot that sort of represents some of the So maybe it represents these areas and some of the key options in these areas for either the options or the drafts in these areas for public comment. It's a thought. We have a vehicle to do that, and I think that's a great idea. We won't be ready in time for Nairobi, but mentioning that that's coming might be a good thing to do within our material for Nairobi. And then it kind of keeps us all focused on developing each of those areas and getting something out there that people can really look at. It's a thought. I know we've got a vehicle to do it. The question is, as a group, do we think it's a good idea or not?
Yeah, it just snaps in. It just touches on an irritation I've had with ICANN meetings, that something that's called a workshop is actually a lecture.
Yeah, and on this one, originally, I'll take a little heat on this one. I'll step up to the frying pan. Originally, I wanted a workshop in Nairobi. I think the issue was that due to circumstance, there are less people than I thought would be there, right?
So to have a really effective workshop, you really kind of need enough critical mass to be participants and lead the conversation and make decisions. I'm not sure we're going to get that in Nairobi.
You may be surprised.
Right?
You may be surprised. At least I know from within at large, we got more than 95% showing up.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, because of that, the thought was, you know, let's do an update to the community on here's where we are. And I'm happy to put in there that you know, in very, very soon we'll have a sort of a snapshot update that has some options for the community to look at and so forth. Mike, I don't know if you want to weigh in on that from a co-chair perspective, but that seems like something we could probably do within that 4 or 5 week time frame.
I don't like timelines. Let's just
gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
We'll do what we do. We make progress because once we start setting timelines, it leads to disappointment and frustration. We do our work. We move forward, and we'll get there when we get there.
Okay. Then maybe we don't announce it, but we do have this sort of monthly snapshot idea. So maybe unofficially, you know, one of those next snapshots or that next snapshot could be that option thing.
Exactly. I think we agreed upon last meeting to do the month or monthly snapshots to show the community the progress we're making. So let's just continue to make progress, and that will just allow us to finish our journey sooner as opposed to later. That's my personal opinion. Obviously, if the group feels otherwise, you know, if the group wants timelines, and you know, then obviously. The consensus will rule the day.
Well, this is Jonathan. I mean, we obviously need to pick a time to conclude our work by.
And why do you say that?
Well, you know, at some point they're going to snap the line on the applicant guidebook. They're going to snap the line on vertical integration. And, you know, with respect to those processes, we need to have something that could be included and leveraged to benefit those purposes. I'm not suggesting that we would be concluded in our ongoing work, but there's probably a deliverable surrounding that we need to be mindful of a time sensitivity.
Well, considering this is voluntary, not mandatory, if it's voluntary, I've seen no reference to high security zones in any of the questionnaires in the current DAG. So I don't see why our work is necessarily tied to the DAG or any of those things. Again, this is a process which, even in the concept paper, Jonathan, references existing registries. So this is not I fail to see how it is inextricably linked to other political forces that are either advocating or opposing the DAG or the new GTLD process. I mean,
well, I guess the correlation, sorry to cut you off, Michael, the correlation is that this is one of the items that's being referenced against one of the overarching issues, which is malicious behavior. And so it is, in some extent, being leveraged as a let's not do this until this is concluded.
Am I missing something? I
okay.
Don't think I'd agree with that because,
okay,
I mean,
good,
supposedly
good.
There's already discussions going on fixing the RAA that's supposedly dealing with the core, you know, what's the baseline minimum of what needs to be done. And that has to go on. I mean, that's going on in parallel, too. So, I mean, I agree that I don't think they have to be linked, but I do think that at the time that the DAG becomes, you know, the D gets dropped from the DAG, that there has to be some indication of when people, you know, some kind of timeline at least ready at that point. At least for first deliverable, sorry.
This is David.
Well, I more agree with that. I'm not an opponent to us, you know, having an ongoing charter, but what I'd hate to do is have a fuzzy timeline or sort of a blasé attitude about concluding things in a timely manner, you know, eat away from volunteer time and disrupt other processes. But I'm grateful to be wrong about this being in the way of the applicant guidebook or things like that.
Dave, go ahead and speak. You were trying to get in. Floor
sure.
is yours.
Thank you. Let me just approach this from a slightly different perspective, because I'm involved in two other volunteer groups that are, you know, are struggling with similar issues of, you know, trying to provide something in what I would call a timely deliverable with reasonable work product operative. And you know, one is the root scaling study. And while I understand your reticence to, you know, to sort of come up with the same kind of, you know, timelines that we see in other, you know, other industry sectors, you know, especially having come from a consulting world where, you know, the client wanted something on a particular day, that's when you did it, when you developed it, and you had intermediate benchmarks. I think that there is a community expectation that we would come to closure on this concept paper at some point in time. And so I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the notion that it's done when it's done. And yeah, I know that there's an awful lot of pushback, you know, at SAC and RSAC, you know, at the moment from a lot of different sectors over the fact that we continue to have no answer from the perspective of making a recommendation to the board, you know, following the publication of the root scaling study team's report. So I just want us to be sensitive to the fact that you know, we are volunteers, or most of us are volunteers. Some of us have 30 other things to do in addition to this, so we have as much time as volunteers. But you know, you can't rely on the volunteers to be around forever either. I mean, there has to be some, you know, some sort of sense of when do we want to get this done.
Well, there's one other possible way to look at this, and that is to go back to ICANN and say, all right, this was ICANN's idea. This is something that they wanted to do. Is ICANN prepared to hire some expert staff to drive this forward who would be committed to it on an ongoing basis to basically become the lightning rod, you know, to do this almost as a full-time thing, and to drive it forward, to basically guide the community.
I don't see how that solves the problem of losing the valuable volunteer experts, you know, who have, you know, community perspectives that have to be shared over time. You know, I can understand wanting to have more staff to do this.
I'll give you a specific example. The organization CompTIA that has the you know, the A plus and the this plus and the that plus certifications, they couldn't do what they do without volunteer subject matter experts, but they do have dedicated staff. So every one of these programs has a dedicated certification manager who is in charge of making sure deadlines are met that's, you know, treats it almost as a product, you know, with the development cycle, and essentially drives the community, finds the subject matter experts, make sure things are done on time. So you have a combination of a community without which this wouldn't happen, but at the same time, sufficient staff resources to basically crack the whip, make sure it happens.
Chair's going to exercise a little, just a point of order. We spent the past 9 minutes discussing timelines, which consumes about 1/6 of our call today. Not exactly what I consider the most efficient use of our time. But that being said, perhaps I put forward for discussion as we can. I am going to let the group continue this discussion, but let me put the following ball in play. Perhaps what we do is ICANN has announced that it is their intention to have the near final DAG, or whatever they want to call it, by Brussels. So I think what we need to do as a group is hopefully most of our work, I would like to be cautiously optimistic that most of our work could be done by Brussels. That being said, perhaps we as a group could agree that at Brussels we will do an assessment, perhaps in our monthly timeline or our monthly snapshot of work we have remaining. Maybe we even do that in the month before or something along those lines. I just put that out there as a point of discussion.
I think that's fine. That gives us a target. You know, I'm not actually, you know, looking for, you know, very, very granular benchmarks. I just want to make certain that we don't have an expectation that we could get volunteers from many of these organizations, you know, who are participating for years on end.
That's not, put it this way, if that is the intention, we'll be looking for a new co-chair rather shortly.
I would expect that, yeah. But yeah, we do have precedent for study topics exceeding decades.
I appreciate that. Okay, so what happens is we're now 5 minutes past the hour. What I'd like to do is I would, in my typical fashion, I would like to go through and give everyone a last couple of minutes of closing thoughts, and I've lost my agenda or my roll call. Andy, you went through the roll at the beginning. If you could start at the top.
Bear with me 1 second, Mike. We'll start with, we'll start with Evan just because I know he's, Evan, yeah, you're the first on my roll here.
Doesn't matter. I've said what I wanted to already. That's it.
Dothan, you're next.
Thank you. So, Michael, I didn't mean to put words in your mouth to say that you're trying to maybe extend this. I know that it's more important to you to get it right. What I was going to suggest is if we could maybe find a hybrid between getting this work done in a timely manner, perhaps if we know that there'll be ongoing work, which I'm certain there will be, that we can make that recommendation in whatever outcome of this group, that there be some sort of a group that, as was suggested, ICANN could fund or, you know, hire experts or include volunteers. But anyway, thank you, everyone.
All right. Excellent. Next up in the queue.
Steve Piscatella.
I'm fine. You know, we had plenty of opportunity to discuss.
Mike, you're actually next.
No comment. I will move forward.
Eric, Andre?
No comments at this time, thanks.
Dan Levine?
I'm baffled, but I'll send people email about it.
that seems like a loaded last final closing comment
very,
there, John.
Very dubious.
I look forward to the email.
John McElwain?
No comments, thanks.
Steve Holston?
Yeah, at the HSTLD advisory group summary that happens in Nairobi, I'd like to use Brian Cute's caution that everything we do be very neutrally stated. So that's just a caution. I think we need to decide, for example, seals and whether we're talking just about registries or whether we're talking about registrants and figuring out how much we bite off and how much is too much to chew. And finally, I think somewhere along the line, we can't just decide on what the program is and then turn to what everything costs. I think we have to decide, at least in general terms, how much things cost in parallel with what the program looks like. Otherwise, we can engineer something that is an incredible solution, but it is outlandishly expensive. But
Steve, can I just mention that we've actually done the same thing in the Zone File Access group. We're looking at costs and trying to understand the cost to both the consumers of zone data and the providers, the registries. And I think that what you're suggesting is appropriate. It would be helpful if there are people who actually, like Mike O'Connell, are able to build cost models like that. There seem to be quite a few of them in the Zone File Access group. I don't know whether that skill set, lies within this group. It might be that we could invite one of them to come and help us here.
Mikey's already. Is it Mikey on this working group or advisory group?
Yes,
Mikey is. Yeah. So Mikey, who's good at charts and stuff like that. The only thing I would point out, Dave, is the justification of the zone file group, right, has been, look, we're going to save you money, right? So it's a lot easier to show you statistics saying we'll save you money, let's do this initiative. I think the question that Steve was potentially raising is what's being asked to be done here is in the short term really not going to save money. It's actually going to be an increased financial burden for all, at least the registration authority. So I think we have to do that because that's one of the things that the affirmation and commitments talks about is looking at how this impacts all impacted parties. So I think we're going to have to do that eventually, and I think it's a good idea.
Did I miss anybody?
I think we're done. All right, everyone. Thank you again. And I guess we'll, for those that will be participating either in person or remotely next week, look forward to speaking to everyone then. Have a good day.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.